Hello, Glenn Johnson here. Welcome to this edition of the New Orleans Voices podcast. This edition, I am featuring an interview with Natalie May, whose latest release is the CD Waiting on You. And if you want to hear more from Natalie, check out her MySpace, myspace.com/Natalie May Music. And if you like the show, you want to download past episodes or subscribe to the podcast, please go to New Orleans Voices. .podomatic.com.
How'd you first get interested in bluegrass?
Well, my parents are folk musicians, and so they've had their own band since they were in college and so forth, and so I kind of grew up just around the folk music, and they included bluegrass into that and a lot of old-time music, and so I just grew up all around it. And finally, in about high school, I started listening to, there were a lot of young bands that really were just rocking, and I finally got wind of those and started really listening to a lot of it, and that just sort of inspired my writing, which took a while to get under my belt, but that right around high school is when it started, when I finally started taking real interest in it.
What were some of the younger bands you were into?
I was listening a lot to The Mammals, which are a group out of New York. They have Tao Rodriguez Seeger, who's Pete Seeger's grandson, and then Mike Miranda and Ruth Unger Miranda, and Mike's brother on drums. And they were one of the first bands to, you know, introduce like a whole drum set, you know, an electric bass into this old-timey bluegrass music. And so they just made it really fun. And they've had a great career ever since. And so I was listening to them a lot. And then Michigan has a really huge folk community with a lot of young people in their, you know, mid to late 20s and early 30s that all play with each other. So that included Seth Bernard and Daisy Mae Erlein and a group called Steppin' In It, Jen Siggett, and just a lot of other really amazing artists that was nice that they were closer to my age and they were just making, you know, my parents' music, which for a while I wasn't interested in. They were making my parents' sort of music really fun. And so it helped me appreciate my parents and their songwriting and their music a lot more, and then just started to help me write my own.
Did it take you seeing it live to really get into it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Because I spent my whole life going to my parents' shows, and that was fun, you know, just being the kid running around selling their CDs. But in high school, I started volunteering at this venue in Ann Arbor, Michigan, called The Ark, and that's a really historical place. It's been around for over 40 years, and it brings these huge acts, huge, amazing folk acts, national touring, world touring acts, and to this really small venue. So it's this really amazingly intimate experience with these huge artists, you know, Joan Baez and John Prine, and just everyone plays there. And so I spent just about 2 years, once I could drive, I was at the Ark almost every night of the week, volunteering at shows and watching them and just being completely blown away at just about every show. When I see something live and get affected like that, that just makes me so want to experience that for myself and make others experience that, you know. It just really inspires wanting to put on a really amazing show. And that comes first with just being an amazing musician, which all of them are, you know. People who are huge because they are really good at what they do. And so that's the number one inspiration, was watching them live and totally experiencing it.
How old were you when you first started writing?
I started writing really awful songs in about seventh grade. My friend and I were writing, we tried to write pop songs, you know. We were writing our own little, like, raps and really stupid, silly songs, like on the radio. But I didn't start really writing stuff that I started actually liking until 11th or 12th grade. And then moving down here really helped. I took a songwriting class here at Loyola with John Rankin. And that was really intimidating because I hadn't written a lot of songs, but he made us go back to songs we had first started writing and helped us, you know, just told us to finish them. And having that regular routine of, like, needing a song every week was enough to just really get my brain flowing. And so most of what I play now is stuff that I've been writing recently, and then a lot of stuff that I started writing 2-3 years ago. And then put on a record. And I didn't start liking what I was writing until about 2-3 years ago.
You've really been enjoying the scene down here. Are you enjoying playing with a full band now?
Oh, yeah. oh, they make me sound so much better than I am when I play solo. Yeah, I played solo for a good year, I guess, until I got, you know, just confident with meeting people and other people taking interest in what I was doing and trusting other people to, you know, be on the same musical page as me, you know. And so far, I've got a great group of guys that really just help accentuate, like, everything that I want to put out on a live show, and they just make it rock. So I have Patrick Fee on drums. Josh Wexler is a musician who all around town plays with Sarah Quintana and White Collar Crimes and a lot of other groups. He was on keys, and then Ted Long on bass. And every once in a while I'll throw in another guitar player here and there, and it just gets really fun. And it took me a while to be a decent band leader. It's taken me a long while, but I think it's almost been a year that I've been playing with the group. We can do a lot more music in a set with them, and we can try a lot more things, and it just gets so much fun.
Find yourself able to take more risk with it, musically? Or?
Yeah, because it helps having a group of guys behind you, because I think that automatically, you know, makes the audience think like, oh, well, if she's doing this, then they're all there with her, so therefore it must be good, you know? So, you know, I wasn't playing banjo for a while because I wasn't sure how banjo was going to sound with the, you know, with like keys and drums, you know, and that sort of thing. But I tried it, you know, and just made it work. And it helps when I know that they're supporting it. And if it's going to sound bad, they would totally let me know. And I totally trust their musical judgment 100%. So it definitely allows a lot of room for risk taking. And it helps when we're able to test it out, you know, in rehearsal time and just see how it goes. And hopefully the audience enjoys it.
When you were making your album, did you follow a certain process for picking songs?
It was pretty much the songs that I had. I did have a few more songs at the time that I didn't quite think were appropriate for the CD. You know, they were just either goofy songs about goofy topics that I just didn't think was going to fit. There were a couple on piano, and then there were a couple on banjo, and there were a couple on uke, and there were a couple, you know, one's a cappella, and then the rest were on guitar. And so for the first CD, I wanted it to be a showcase of all that I was doing and could do, which was trying to play all those instruments well, you know. A lot of them are instruments I've been playing for a long time, but when you write your own music on it, you're the only one in control of how it's going to sound. And especially when it's your own original tune, you're the only one that's going to put off whether it's successful or not. And so recording it was really personally challenging to say, okay, you wrote this banjo tune, so play this banjo well, you know. Play it well and sing it well. And, you know, there are all these different dimensions to a song that you can either be more confident about or less confident about, you know. And recording it forced me to be 100% confident with everything that I was doing.
Did you record most of it live?
Yeah, most of it was live. Most of it started with me. Like, I would either, you know, put the first few tracks in the vocals, and a few of them, Ted Long recorded bass live with me. So a few of the songs required that, you know, we're there with each other and able to communicate with each other live in the studio. But most of it was just piece by piece. Most of it was, we'd lay down a certain track and then I'd add something more. And then we'd add, you know, the bass part. And then we would add an extra guitar part or an extra fiddle part or an extra banjo part. But most of it was, a lot of it was just me first, you know, setting the groundwork and then built on top of it.
You play so many instruments. What was the first instrument you learned how to play?
The first instrument was piano. I started that when I was 5. And then, you know, a few band instruments came in from school. So I was clarinet and oboe and saxophone for one marching band season. And then right about when I was 16, I started playing guitar. I just really wanted to learn guitar and build up my calluses. And he was playing guitar. Then a couple of friends and I, when we were in high school, we had our own little folk trio, so I played bass in that. But I wouldn't say, I can maybe, you know, fiddle a little bit with upright bass, depending on the key. But we were playing very basic folk tunes. And so I did bass and banjo with my junior and senior year in high school. And then, well, all my life we'd had this banjo uke sitting on our wall in our living room, not being played. And one of my favorite singers, Ruth Unger Miranda, the singer in the Mammals, she put out her own record with amazing original tunes, and she plays the banjo uke, and she's got this amazing voice. And I saw this uke sitting at our house, and I was like, I can't not learn this because I'm in love with this instrument, and I know someone who makes it sound so awesome. So I brought it down, and I was like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to play the banjo uke, too, and make it work, and hopefully make it sound good. So
you probably have a monopoly on the banjo uke in New Orleans.
Yeah, I haven't seen another one since. Yes, it's definitely cool. A lot of people are playing uke. Uke's very popular, and it helps that uke's so popular. So yeah, this kind of just adds a new twist on it, since it looks like just a miniature banjo. It's tuned like a uke, so I can get away with playing all the goofy little uke tunes on this little banjo uke.
What are your plans in terms of your next album?
Well, I've been writing since about August. I was really intimidated once the CD came out last May, because it was just a new dimension to, you know, knowing that other people could listen to the songs anytime they wanted, and then, you know, people are going to have certain expectations, and so I was really nervous with writing new stuff just because I did, you know, I got really intimidated by what people were going to expect and what they would want to hear and what they wouldn't want to hear and da-da-da, and I finally just ignored that, and I had a lot of musician friends just say, no, don't concentrate on that, just write what you're going to write, like write what comes. So I have quite a few new tunes, and I have a friend who's got big ambitions with me about recording a new album with very soon, starting probably in about March. We've done a lot of rough tracks just with the tunes that I have so far. So I'm in the process of writing the other band parts, and it's going to be a much different approach because I'm going to have a lot more people involved. We're going to record a lot of it live in the studio with the whole group together. And it's going to be more songs that, you know, are just the first album, you know, is really, someone described it as pure, so I'll use that. So it's really simple. Simple was the basis for the first album. I just wanted to keep it very simple and accentuate the simplicity of it, you know, and make it beautiful even though it's so simple. And this next one, I really just want to emphasize the group and all the talent that they have, and have a lot more people on board with it, you know, like a string quartet and stuff that I'm writing. So it's gonna be really fun. I just want it to be really fun.
It's gonna be like a lusher album, like more arranged.
Definitely. Oh yeah, way more arranged, which is the the hardest part for me right now, because I've been out of school and I haven't written, you know, notation music in years. But that's the most fun part about it is, now, hearing all these new things in my head for these new tunes and being able to put it down and knowing that they'll be executed exactly as I hear them. That's such a fun feeling, is writing something and then having it sound exactly how you pictured it in your head, you know. So that's what I'm looking most forward to for this next album. I just have to make sure I write it right.
Play a lot around town, and do you have a favorite venue in New Orleans?
I have quite a few. I really love playing at the Circle Bar. It's just such a fun atmosphere. It's small, but I think it's just really fun. Like, maybe because it's the most frequent place that I have played, but I just feel like I can do anything when I go there. You know, anything new that I want to try, I'll try it out there. I still do a monthly gig at the Neutral Ground. I've been playing there. That was the first place I ever started playing, and so I love going back there every month and trying new things. Mostly solo. I mostly do solo stuff there. And it's just a great community with great people there and a great support system. I really like Maison de la Musique on Frenchman. I did a gig there in December for the first time, and I'll be playing there again the Wednesday before Mardi Gras. And that's just a great setup. It's a great looking venue, and it's a great, great stage. Couple stages. and then Carrollton Station, I'll be there this Thursday. That's a really great, really fun venue. It's also a really nice setup and area, and it's just good people there. So there are really a lot of good places around town. New Orleans is a remarkably small city musically. You know, people are everywhere, and musicians are everywhere, and it's so great that there's such a great community of support around. You know, the more people you meet, and the more people you play with, and the more people that hear you, you know, it's just, I wouldn't leave it. I would be crazy to leave it right now, because, you know, I still feel like I'm just just getting my foot in the door. You know, I'll probably feel like that forever. You know, just feel like I get a foot in the door. I feel like I'm putting in my time right now. That's what I'm doing, and I'm having so much fun doing it, you know? So they're just great people in this city, and so much talent, and so much just fun people to play with, you know?
That was Natalie May, and this has been the New Orleans Voices Podcast. If you like what you heard, want to download the podcast or subscribe to past episodes, please go to neworleansvoices.podomatic.com.